love your work. On this show, we help you find success on your own terms. I'm David Cadavy. I've been an independent creator for more than 10 years. I've written a couple best-selling books, Designed for Hackers, Now the Heart to Start. If you're new here, welcome. Again, I'm David Cadavy. If you want to join us here on Love Your Work every Thursday, please hit subscribe on your podcast app. And there's a new place that you can subscribe to Love Your Work. Love Your Work is now an Amazon Echo skill. You can listen to Love Your Work on your Amazon Echo. This is different from listening via Bluetooth or on TuneIn. This is much easier. To add the skill, say, Alexa, enable Love Your Work. It's very important, by the way, to use the word enable and not add. I had some trouble with it at first. Alexa, enable Love Your Work. Also, you can search on the Alexa app or visit cadavy.net/Alexa. If you enjoyed last week's essay about taking your own advice, you are going to love this conversation today. Cy Wakeman is the founder of Reality-Based Leadership. She wrote a book called No Ego. And No Ego is a leadership book, which is an unusual read for me since I'm a solopreneur, but I couldn't put it down. You might hear me talk about ego from time to time. I think my conversation with Ryan Holiday back on episode 31 was the first time I was really thinking about ego. He wrote the book, Ego is the Enemy. Since then, I've come to realize that ego is the number one enemy that can hold you back from reaching your creative potential. Your ego will keep you from being accountable to yourself and what you want to accomplish. It will direct your attention outside of you and cause you to blame others. It will cause you to make limiting excuses for yourself. But if you're able to bypass your own ego, something magical happens. You start to concentrate on what you can control. You start to see a connection between your actions and the results that you get. And this is what I loved so much about Cy's book, No Ego. It is a powerful book for keeping ego from ruining your workplace, but at the same time, it's a powerful book for keeping ego from ruining yourself and sabotaging your own potential. So I'm really excited to have her on the show today. By the way, quick note, I'm going to sound kind of bad in this conversation. We had some technical difficulties. I lost my concentration. I didn't consult my checklist, and I had the wrong mic active. Now, fortunately, Cy is doing most of the talking, and she sounds great. Now, I just wanted to say a quick hello and thank you to Mary Marood on Twitter. She shared Love Your Work with her Twitter's followers, saying, "Podcast alert. At Cadavy's Love Your Work never fails to inspire me and help me think in new ways, even when I don't think I'm going to be interested. Highly suggest you give it a listen. Hashtag never fails." Thank you so much, Mary. If you are enjoying Love Your Work, please share with your friends. It's been a while since the show has grown. I, for one, think there is a lot of really good stuff that people are missing out on. Now, if you want to help keep Love Your Work going, by the way, donations really, really help. About half of production costs are listener-supported through donations. Just a coffee a month from another 20 or so people, and production costs would be fully listener-supported. So if you want to be a part of bringing Love Your Work into the world, if you want to know that you are helping bring Love Your Work to thousands of people each week, donate on Patreon. Visit cadavy.net/donate. Again, that is cadavy.net/donate. Here is Cy Wakeman.
I'm really thrilled to be here with Cy Wakeman, and I loved your book, No Ego. And there was a term in there that really resonated with me so much. It was called emotional waste. And I think when somebody hears that term, it's like, oh my gosh, what emotional waste? I can't have that. So what does the term emotional waste mean?
It's really a scientific term for drama. I am a drama researcher, and emotional waste is any unproductive thought pattern or disruptive behavior that really brings waste into any process. So when we think about waste, we think about, if we're in a company, we look at throughput and there's rework and that caused waste, and we work our tails off to improve a process to get rid of waste. And I grew up as a therapist, was my first career, and I would watch people use really poor mental processes and create so much waste in their lives. But it was emotional waste. It was drama. It was worrying and venting and judging and, you know, doubting and just all of the things that we do when we start believing our own thinking. And so I came across the idea, if drama is emotional waste, then the way you get rid of waste is a good process. The way you get rid of emotional waste is with using better mental processes. And that's something not all of us have really gotten skilled in.
And this was an amazing thing that I saw in the book. Just it's shocking. So the average employee spends 2.5 hours per day dealing with drama. Yeah. So what kind of drama are they typically dealing with in that sort of situation?
Well, and it's not just dealing with it, but like being in drama.
Ah, okay.
So my research, we looked at how much time in a workday, not even considering home, does someone spend in drama? And when I first talk about drama, most people are like, I don't have drama. But when you think about how often you walk around going, this is sick and wrong, this is no way to run a company, and I wasn't consulted, and somebody should have asked me, and I know better, and resisting change, and withholding buy-in, venting, gossiping, judging, meetings after the meeting, scorekeeping, all of those things are time we spend in drama. We're still working and getting some things done. But when you're in drama, it's like swimming through mud. And when you're not in drama, it's like walking through air. Same day, same boss, same job. Two different ways to go through life. So yeah, 816 hours a year, the average person spends in drama.
Wow. And so when they don't have the drama, then it's there's just more action taking place. Is it, how much emotional waste can actually be eliminated? Like, is it reasonable to expect that 2.5 to become zero? What's realistic there?
Well, we all have the human condition of ego, which is the main source of drama. So while I would like to say that it is realistic to get to zero, not all of us are going to be Buddha or Gandhi or Muhammad or Jesus soon. But you can dramatically decrease it in just, you know, an instant, just toggling between like your lowest self and your highest self. We call it using an ego bypass. So you move quickly beyond ego into the better part of your brain. So the expectation is we work in my office and in my clients, they have very low drama workplaces. And while drama fuels drama, lack of drama also fuels lack of drama. It's kind of a flywheel that gets going. So I think you can get it. Our office is pretty low. I think you can get it very low. And then you win in two ways. So you recapture the mind share and time involved in drama. So for instance, my boss may have called me and asked about one of my projects and took 5 minutes of my day. And maybe the way he or she did it wasn't how I would prefer. 5 minutes. I'm the one that gives him or her the next 45 minutes of my day, thinking about it, reminiscing about it, talking to others about it. So you free up the time. But what really happens is you start to work at a higher level of consciousness, which gives you these rewards because it really puts you, your work becomes more effortless because you're tapped into source, to your creativity, to your innovation, to your collaboration. And so the behavior not only frees up time, but it taps you into a place beyond ego that really work becomes effortless. And you also tap into a place that's really, in my mind, pretty boundless, that there just aren't a lot of limitations when you're in that place. And we've all been there. You know, we've been in the zone. And it's that incredible creative zone that you get into where you're just slaying dragons and it feels awesome.
Yeah, and this is something that I talk about a lot, is creative productivity and how to kind of get past your own ego, which, you know, how do you get past your own ego? Are there actual methods that or techniques that you can use to bypass the ego?
There really are. To maybe set that up a little bit, David, like if people understood their brain in a very simple way. So your brain has a more primal part of you, which is ego. Ego isn't all bad. It helps with some of your separation and some of your confidence. It's not all negative. But when you're thinking in ego, you're really narrow in your focus. You're really focused on what's wrong with reality and what's wrong with circumstances and why we can't. You're not locked into how we could. So your ego is really a victim-minded narrator. And everything you do as you operate through the day, your ego is adding color commentary. And a lot of people believe everything they think without question. So they really get a distorted view on reality because they're believing their own thinking. If you can sit back and just watch that you're not the one thinking, you're being thought. So if you can come to understand when you're an ego, that's kind of your lower self. And we all have a toggle switch where you can toggle into your higher self in just a minute. So here's the secret about the brain to understand is your brain's binary. It can't be in ego and into self-reflection at the same time. And self-reflection really opens up your inner hemisphere where you have innovation, collaboration, like the best part of your brain. So venting is the ego's way of avoiding self-reflection because self-reflection builds accountability and accountability is death to the ego. So the way to toggle out of ego, and we believe the superpower, the ego bypass is all about self-reflection and questioning your own thinking. So let's say that I am frustrated that my boss is a micromanager and he does this crap on purpose and he set me up to fail. And I'm really in ego and I'm frustrated. And I'm just thinking about ways he needs to change and how this all works. If I use a simple question for self-reflection, like what do I know for sure? All that stuff I knew for sure dissolves because I don't really know that he does it on purpose. I don't know he set me up. I don't even know he's a micromanager. If you really get down to the facts, all he did was call and check on the status of one of my projects. And so when I just ask a simple question, what do I know for sure? And it becomes like nothing. It's like, dang, I don't really have any issues. Then what could I do next that would add value? I could get focused on the project he wanted me to put my energy on. It is just a way of bypassing. And most of those bypasses are questions. Like if I'm frustrated that, our podcast, we had some technical difficulties and my assistant should have set me up better. And, I'm in ego. And if I just use a simple self-reflection, I go, wait a minute, Sai, what would great look like right now? If I were great, what would that look like right now? Bam, I just toggle up into the better part of my brain that says, great would be, check out different headsets, use David as a resource, stop judging, start helping, right? And so once you do this enough, that toggle becomes very easy because the lesson of your brain is you can't be in ego and self-reflection and impact and action at the same time.
Yeah. And I love that you use that example because before this, at the very beginning of this conversation, we did have technical difficulties with one technology. We tried a different headset. We moved to different technology. Then we got something working. Like, well, can we go back to the other technology? It would have been really easy. Where you just kind of be like, oh, this guy is just such a pain. Yeah. But you just acted on it and it worked out great. There was very little emotional waste in that whole interaction.
Exactly. And it could have really changed our interaction right now. It's like it was easier for me not to be an ego about that. Because I have a lot of practice. I meditate. I do a lot of things to stay out of ego. Doesn't mean I'm perfect and don't have an ego. But that's a great example, David. In that moment, I could have got frustrated and flustered and then not been having a great conversation with you that's easygoing and free-flowing because I would have had all that carryover from that interaction.
Yes.
And so it makes our work effortless because neither one of us got hooked or snagged on our ego into judgment there. We just immediately went on to innovation. And here's the super cool part of my work that I found out is that innovation is our natural state once the ego or once the drama's gone. Mm. So like when a lot of people go, I need to learn to be innovative or I need to learn to be creative or I need to be better at, collaboration or teamwork. What I tell them is you already are amazing. If you're out of ego and out of drama, you already have all this stuff. So you don't need to get something more to tap into it. And it's like when Michelangelo supposedly was asked about carving David and they're like, was it hard to make this masterpiece? And supposedly he said, no, I simply removed everything that wasn't David. And most of us in creative spaces, we need to like think up what we're going to write or, envision what we're going to sculpt. we have to make lists on how to be a better person. And the reality is, I think it's very counterintuitive. I think you already are that. Once you are very wary about moving out of ego, carving away anything that isn't happiness and success and love and peace and health, and, you know, reality is perfect just how it is. If we just accept it, like, it's not about learning or adding to, it's about moving away from drama and ego. Once you're out of drama, your natural state really is innovation. You don't have to learn to be innovative.
There was something that you brought up that I want to dig a little bit deeper into, was this idea that venting doesn't help. Actually, way back in college, I studied under a guy named Brad Bushman, who did a lot of research, I guess, that was groundbreaking on this idea that venting did not help. The idea that if they had people vent, then later on, it was actually easier for them to be more, I think it was, stimulated, therefore easier to be angry later on. Can you talk a little bit about why venting doesn't work?
Yeah. So the ego's way of communicating is venting. It's, about everybody else, about the situation being bad. It's about blame. It's about victimhood. The ego really, its job is to protect you from any fault or guilt. It's to preserve you feeling good. And so venting really is the work of the ego. And a lot of people will tell me, you know, but gosh dang, Sai, it just feels good to vent sometimes. And my response to them is, a lot of things feel good. I mean, I've heard crack cocaine feels good, but it's not it's not like a lifestyle we all want to adopt. And you're exactly right. Bushman started it. Other people have found that when you form a neural pathway with a behavior, that neural pathway can only be fed or itched, so to speak.
Neurons that fire together wire together, right?
Exactly. So if I form something with deep venting, the only way to itch it is more venting. It becomes kind of an addiction. And like I said, the brain is such, it's binary. You can't vent and self-reflect at the same time. And venting is avoiding self-reflection. Self-reflection is where the truth will set you free. And so if I can self-reflect and find, what's my part in this? What am I thinking? Is that true? Who do I believe when I, or who am I when I believe that thought? If I can't unhook from that constant tape of ego being played in my mind through self-reflection and questioning and inquiry, then I never get free. And so a lot of people, you know, say, well, then I can't share any feelings. And I was a therapist. You can share feelings. But anything after like one sentence of sharing feelings is venting, because it's a story you made up. And venting, what we're venting about usually never even happened, which blows people's minds. Usually what you're venting about, what you're stressed about, is your story, not your reality. Mm-hmm.
I remember one of the stories that you were, or one of the examples you gave in the book, was basically that somebody was upset that the ice cream social was planned during a time when they were not able to attend it. And so they thought the story that this person had made up for themselves was that, oh, they did that on purpose.
Yeah. And I use this simple story because I want listeners to understand how often we're being played by the ego. Like, this is lifelong work for me. And as I free myself up from ego, my creativity just explodes. But yeah, I was in this company and she said, this is a really toxic culture. And I said, gosh, I just haven't felt that. But you know, I'm here to help. I'm a consultant. If you've got proof, let's look at it and see if we can help. And she called me over and she goes, look at this email. And it literally said, you are invited to an ice cream social at 2 o'clock this afternoon. And I was thrilled. I love ice cream. It's free. It's in the afternoon. I'm like, this is awesome. I'm like, oh my God, I love this company. And she says, oh, you don't know the backstory. They scheduled this at 2 o'clock because they know my team at that time is least likely to be able to go. And I'm like, seriously? I said, I've met your HR team. In order for them to inconvenience you most, they would have to do like math, like they would have to do algebra, like X and a Y. And I was just joking with her. I go, they're all liberal arts majors. They can't do that kind of math. It's not intentional. And And then she went on, she's like, oh, but I'm lactose intolerant. They don't offer an alternative. And that's when I realized she was viewing the world through the filter of ego. And your ego filters the world. It distorts your view of the world. And ego eats anger for lunch. It needs to find insult where there isn't any to stay like mildly irritated to stay alive. And it's just interesting. I find myself and others in ego a lot where we get upset about things that never happened.
Yeah. And it seems like a lot of companies are, they're getting more aggressive in trying to create this environment that, where they're catering to what employees want and desire, but that can actually backfire. Is that right?
I agree. Absolutely. So my book, No Ego, kind of blew up some of the HR world and current philosophies, and didn't just blow them up and disrupt them. I gave some solutions too, but a lot of the things we teach leaders to do and HR embarks on is actually fueling the drama. It's coddling the people. So for instance, there's a lot of work on engagement. How can I perfect your circumstances so that you give us the gift of your work, that you feel good about life? And for me, you're just buying people's love. Engagement without accountability just creates entitlement. It's not how engagement works. So for instance, I tell the story in the book about a nurse came to me and she was with a patient. I worked in healthcare. And as she was prepping the patient for a procedure, it became evident that there was a mistake in the medical record and the patient was being prepped for a different procedure than what that patient came in for. So the patient got hysterical. The nurse got really frustrated and she came to me as her leader and she's venting. She's like, registration can't manage the way I have a paper bag. And if I did my job like they did their job, I'd be fired and heads should roll and this place is unsafe. And traditionally, what I've been taught as a leader is you listen to her vent, you calm her down, you go and fix it, and you talk to the patient for her, and then you do a process improvement scenario. You do all of this stuff to try and make sure that she never, ever is put in the position again of having to be involved with the mistake. Well, what I did was I knew she was an ego, and I just said, you know that I care about you. And here's a question. If you were great right now, what would great look like? And the cool thing about that question is everyone knows what great looks like, except that it's what we judge other people on. See, I know what great looks like. It's what my colleague's not doing. But she answered the question. She's like, I would be back in the room and let the patient know this is part of our process. This is the reason we check. So not to be upset, you know, it's actually a good sign it's working. And all I had to do is say, then go be great. She knew what to do. And that question took her from venting, where she couldn't see any impact, the whole world's wrong, to knowing through self-reflection where she could have impact, and then she was able to go plug and play. And engagement is correlated to self-reflection, accountability, and impact. Your happiness is about the level of accountability you take, not about your circumstances. There's lots of research about that. So the engagement is not for me to make sure she only has perfect circumstances. Engagement is for me to help her find ways that even in imperfect circumstances, she can still have amazing impact. And that is what truly feeds engagement. So I really kind of, you know, hit engagement and I hit change management. A lot of people believe change is hard. And I propose it's not. It's only hard for the unready. And the way we keep people unready is we coddle them and fix their circumstances. So I'm a big proponent of don't rush to change people's circumstances. Grow them so that they're more skilled, that they can walk freely in the world, that they can live in this reality more skillfully rather than always having to dumb down or bend reality to not upset them. So I think we're really off track focusing on perfecting circumstances. I think we should focus on growing the people so they can live skillfully and freely in any circumstance. And it's possible beyond ego.
Well, this is something that I see even in my own everyday life. And this is admittedly a very basic example, but you know, like I ordered some shoes once and they came in the mail, took a few days, and they were kind of a different shade of gray than I thought they were going to be. And so I was kind of upset about it at first. And then I'm thinking about, oh, I need to send it back and that's going to be such a pain. And you know, if I kind of take your advice and look at, okay, what do I know for sure? What I know for sure is I have these shoes. They're a different shade of gray than I expected. And I have choices. I can send them back, or I can decide that sending them back is not worth it, and that eventually I'll forget that the shoes are a slightly different shade of gray than I thought they were going to be. And what I ended up doing was just keeping the shoes, and I ended up being fine because I got on with my life and I got on to things that I could control instead of living in the drama of being upset about a little thing.
Which is so perfect. And I always say in your jobs, stay in joy or go in peace. But there's no third option to like stay in hate. And a typical person wouldn't send them back because it was a hassle. And whenever they wore them would be ticked about it because they weren't right. And it's like, well, send them back or accept them. But here's what happens when you live in some radical acceptance. And I don't mean passiveness, but acceptance is I've done things like that and they have become the shoes everyone compliments me on, or they become my favorite shoes. Like I didn't even know I needed those. The universe sends them, you know, and I'm like, I don't think these are right, but you know, I'm just going to enjoy them anyway. And all of a sudden I really open up the magic in that silly pair of shoes where, you know, I see somebody else with the same shoes on. We start a conversation and bam, we're collaborating together, you know, on an endeavor. Most people spend so much time in drama arguing with reality that it's wrong and it's not how they want and it's not what they expected, that they miss out on all the things that are perfectly right about reality. And if they just accepted some of these things, they would pop into this other dimension of the unlimitlessness of reality. And that's the dimension most people don't get to pop into because they're still mad about the wrong color of shoes and how hard it is to return it.
We're going to take a quick break. I'm really excited to have Skillshare back on the show as a sponsor of Love Your Work. I know that you will love Skillshare because you're a Love Your Work listener, and Love Your Work listeners naturally love to learn. And if you aren't familiar with Skillshare, it is an online learning platform with over 18,000 classes in business, marketing, entrepreneurship, technology, and more. They have everything. A class that I personally really enjoyed is called The Writer's Toolkit, 6 Steps to a Successful Writing Habit. It is by author and screenwriter Simon Van Boy, and it will help you get into the writer's mindset.
So, you know, in surgeon's work, it's blood and things moving and like, you know, it's not like working on a sketch from Grey's Anatomy. So just get used to the fact that you're going to be in the gore, in the trenches, and nothing's going to feel like it's working, probably.
Join the millions of students already on Skillshare today with a special offer just for my listeners. Get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents. 99 cents. You can't even buy a decent pen for that price. Anyway, that is right. Skillshare is offering Love Your Work listeners 2 months of unlimited access to over 18,000 classes for just 99 cents. To sign up, go to skillshare.com/loveyourwork. Again, go to skillshare.com/loveyourwork to start your 2 months now.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. You know, every once in a while, as I was wearing those shoes, I would look down on them and think, ah, for a second, like, ah, they're just not quite the right color. And then I would just kind of tell my brain to shut up. And then I got on with it. But you're right. It was a choice. I decided like, well, you decided not to send them back. You decided to live with it. So are you going to do that or not? You know, it's just like a very small thing. Now, I want to get into some of like your tactics and methods for catching your own emotional waste, bypassing your own ego. I was sharing some things on Twitter from the highlights from reading your book, which I highlighted a ton. One of the more popular highlights, I ended up writing a post about it even on Medium, was take your own advice. Do you have advice for others? Write down exactly what you think they should or should not be doing and enact that advice in your own life. And that is such a powerful thing. It's something I try to do with my own writing. Like the books that I write, a lot of what I write is for myself, is to like take my own advice. And it's really a powerful thing to you know, at first, if I'm writing it and I think I'm writing it to give advice to somebody, I read over it and it sounds kind of arrogant and it sounds kind of domineering. But when I start thinking about my own experience and when I start trying to give myself advice, then, I mean, it makes my writing better, but it also makes me in a happier state, and it puts me in a position where I feel like I am in joy, right? I'm in something that I have control over. So can you talk a little bit about why take your own advice works?
It's such a fun tip. I'm glad you picked up on that one. It gets us immediately out of ego, because when we're in ego, we're walking around and we're just looking at everybody judging. We're like, well, they should not go out in yoga pants and they should drive better. And, you know, it was especially like people we love. Like for me, I'm married and to my husband, and I'm like, he should think of me more often, and he should just buy silly little gifts for me, and he should. And I just have lists of what other people need to do. And that's ego. And so what I started to think about is, if it's so easy, why don't I go first? Why don't I role model? Why don't I be the change I wish to see in the world? And instead of projecting and judging, I just go, gosh, if I value that, then I'll go first. I'll do that. And one of two things happens. I realize how harsh I am. Like, I'm like, people shouldn't wear yoga pants in public. I love my yoga pants. I have them on right now. I just need to like be nicer. Or if it's really worthy stuff, I can use it to improve my life. And then people change, if they're gonna, out of you showing the way, not you preaching the way. And it's been such a lifesaver for me. Especially my relationships, you know, like with my kids, I'm like, they should do their homework, and I'll be so mad. And I'll think, I don't do my homework. Why don't I just do my homework? Why don't I get my room cleaned up, or I do, you know, my stuff? And it just frees me up from being in everybody else's business. It gets me back to my business, the only place I can make a difference. And it's good advice. I just tend to not take it for myself all the time. So it's a way to get me out of judgment and into self-improvement. And a lot of times I realize that I have a lot of advice that's just plain ridiculous that no one should take. And other times it's really good advice and it's very helpful. And I'm glad that I've helped myself with it. You know, so, and then people will ask me, they're like, how do you get it all done in a day? And I'm like, well, here's some advice I had for myself that I took. It might be helpful to you. I don't know, but it totally keeps me out of needing them to change for me to be okay. So it frees me up twice. It unhooks me from me needing them to be different. And then it unhooks me from my own limitations on how I maybe could be improved. And it's just a really beautiful thing.
I mean, I love that you're sharing your own personal experiences there, because this is something that I talk about a lot with people who are thinking about starting a blog, or they're thinking about putting some kind of work out there. And a lot of them have kind of imposter syndrome about it. And I think a lot of it is, oh, who am I to teach this particular thing? I'm not an expert on this particular thing. But my advice to them is often, you know, go ahead and share your experiences. This is what happens. This is what I learned. This is what I might be wrong about. I think that a lot of imposter syndrome can come from imagining that you have to be walking around telling people what to do, like you are the expert, when really, like, finding your own truth is very powerful. Is that something that you found with your own work?
I love that. And in fact, you know, I tell people, I write on this stuff and I tell people, just be very clear, I screw this up only daily. If you think you're the expert, if you have to be the expert on something, yeah, you shouldn't write anything, because, I mean, that's a no win. You are the expert on you and your own experience. But what I like to do to get myself past that writer's block is just believe that I am one of many involved in the big crowdsource. So if somebody Googles, how do I live happy with my husband? I am not an expert on living happy with my husband, but I can be a generous participant in that person's crowdsourcing. So I am like one data point that can tell from my own experience what works for me. And they're going to crowdsource. They're going to talk to therapists and experts and, you know, wherever they go. And what helps me write blogs is I don't have to be the expert. I don't have to have the answer. I have to have one tip, one thing that moved the needle for me that may resonate with another that they could find. And so I can never write a blog that is, you know, inclusive of everything or gives all of my best work or even solves the problem for anybody else. But I can give you one more thing to consider or a small pivot that you might make in your mindset. And it's not necessarily for you. I tell people when I write, I can't write with expectations. I write with great expectancy that the universe does crazy stuff with what we write. But I can just write with no motive. I write and I do my part. So the minute I published that book, it was not my business what happened with that book in the world and whether you read it and we got together. My business was writing to the best of my ability, my experience. And then you just give birth to it and whatever happens, happens. And that takes a lot of pressure off me because I like you. I didn't grow up wanting to be a writer. In fact, people are like, how'd you get published? I'm so embarrassed to tell them my story. I'm so accidental. It's ridiculous how I got published.
Yeah, me too. I feel like I got very, very lucky. But I love this idea of thinking of yourself as part of somebody's crowdsource because that's something that's, I mean, from the very first day that I wrote a blog post, 2004, I was always trying to operate with, okay, there's a Google search engine and people use that to find things. I'm going to write something that I learned. How are they going to find that thing?
That's why you got a keyword, put the keyword. Yeah, exactly. Because you got to keyword it. You've got to stage it so that people can find you. Everybody has great stuff. The people who rise to the top didn't rise, if there is a top, I don't think there's a top, but the people who are most visible right now didn't get there because they have the best answers. They got there because they beat obscurity. Right. So a lot of people are starting to know who I am. And it's not because I have fantastic answers. It's because I have intentionally, my race I'm running is against obscurity, not against all my fellow collaborators. Once I break through obscurity, then I can break through obscurity for them. And that's why the world's abundant. And I can say, no, let's podcast together. Let's link together. Let's share. Because the enemy isn't each other and all this fabulous creativity going on. That's all just manifestations of the source. And the source is really activated right now. And it wants a lot of us talking, a lot of us painting and showing and speaking. Because there's a lot of people searching. And when more people are searching, I believe, more people get activated. They want to write. They want to speak. They want to do things because we're all part of the source that's getting activated. And so I don't have to compete against all my fellow humans worldwide who are putting out amazing stuff. My only competition is obscurity. And once I break through that veil, then it's my job to help others break through that veil as well.
Oh, yeah, you really do have a very impressive presence on the web with your blog and your Twitter and your various clips that you're putting out. Am I right? Are you working with Gary Vaynerchuk on that stuff?
I am. I'm so fortunate. He opened up last year Vayner Talent, which was using what he did to build his personal brand to help others. Mm. And even I've gone all in as a client. They chose 6 beta clients. I was one of them.
Wow.
And so that's been mind blowing in itself. Gary is absolutely the most amazing, loving guy. We adore him. But he also is trying to make it affordable to everybody. I mean, he has days that even small business people can come in and learn all the concepts. And his newest book is great. I won't do a Gary Vee commercial, but I've had the opportunity to work with him. And this is another thing that I think people get stuck on their creativity. People want to create and that is kind of an ego thing. Like, oh, I'm going to sit and think until I come up with something to create. And I've got to create it really perfectly. And then I've got to film it. And I've got to do this. And the way I've gotten past all that is document. So now instead of create,
yes,
I'm doing creative things my whole day. Like, this is an act of creativity, having a cool conversation with you. So instead of me having to create it, we just document it where I don't even know cameras are around anymore. And then we edit it a little bit, not heavy, because we want that raw content. And then we put it out there. And so many people are living their lives and then they dream like they're going to have this hour tonight to create, but that you never get the hour. And then they think they never create. I'm like, oh my God, you created all day long. You just didn't document it. I have a friend who does the most incredible doodles when she's on the phone, and she throws them away at the end of the day. And so I actually had one of her a little notepad that I'm like, I'm taking this with me. And I framed like four of her doodles because they're the coolest thing I've ever seen. And she creates all day long. But if you talk to her, she'd be like, you know, someday I'm going to be an artist. I'm like, girl, you are missing the point. You are an artist. If I were you, I would take a picture of every doodles for the day and put it out there. People would love that on Instagram.
Yeah, I think that we often get this idea in our head of this grand thing that we're going to do, but we forget that we might be doing the thing right now. We might already be doing it. If we can be comfortable with where we are, then bit by bit, we can actually build up to that grand thing.
Yeah. And improv, for me, is important. Like, get it out there so that the world can play with it. Don't keep it in your mind, and then you decide which of these 12 things the world would love. And put that one thing out there, put it all out there. And then the world will tell you what it needs by the hits you get or the play it gets. And then that leads to your next blog and your next inspiration, because people ask questions and you engaged with them. And a lot of people sit back waiting for inspiration to happen. And I say, make a move and play with the feedback you get. That will continue the inspiration going. So I've learned a lot, like, not being perfect and just getting stuff out there and being vulnerable. And just a lot of times people go, I think that's a crappy answer. And I go, I love your point. I'm starting to think so too. Like, you know, thanks for sharing. So people are already creating. And what helps me when I create and I put it out there is it's through dialogue that I get to know myself and my next best idea, not through isolation. And I always thought, like, if I was going to go write, or if I was going to, like, I have this dream about being a sculptor. I've made one sculpture that my kids won't let me put in the living room. I think it's awesome. So it's in my room. But if there's one thing I've learned, it's like, I thought you went away to do this stuff. Because I'm an introvert. Like, I thought you have to go in a desert, you're a tropical island for six months to write a book. And I realized that life doesn't work that way. And it's no longer about going away from energy to create, that a lot of times it's using the energy of others to create. And that comes through interaction and dialogue and collaboration and just being inspired by their projects. If I have writer's block, it's not because I don't have enough time. It's because I've broken this energy cycle. It means I haven't read enough. I haven't, you know, been helping others. I haven't been in dialogue.
When I get writer's block, it's because my ego is holding back. Like my brain is telling me this thing over and over again, but my ego is like, I'm not going to write that down. That's something that happens to me.
It's the editor, right? So I was struggling one time, and maybe it was Anne Lamott's book, Bird by Bird. I love that book.
I haven't yet, but I haven't recommended it.
Everybody, it's so good. But a lot of times I'm writing and editing at the same time, and my ego is the editor. And so nothing gets out of me to even be played with, because the ego like kills it. It edits it before I even write it. So one time, and I can't remember if it was her work or somebody else, they said, you can't write and edit at the same time. So write a really crappy first, like, throw up draft, and then put it away, and then come back in a separate act to edit. But when you come back in that separate act to edit, don't edit from the ego, edit from the kindest, softest part of you. You know, the sweetest, most loving part, and edit from that place that you look at it. You're like, it could be so much more lovelier. Let's make it better. Let's change words. So that was just interesting to me. Our ego does edit way too much, doesn't hit the world because of our darn egos.
I love what you said about improvisation too. It really made me think about a thing that I'm kind of intending to write about, which I should just go on and do it, which is basically that I don't know what I'm doing. You know, people might look at something that I'm doing and say, oh, wow, look at how this thing was connected to that. And you were writing these Medium articles and then that happened. And I'm like, we're reading way, way too much into it. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm doing the stuff. And then it starts to connect together.
It does. And that's where you get it out beyond you and you get it out there. And then people can actually then interact with it and connect with it. It's very ego to think I have to go out and plan my life and make all the connections and orchestrate where this thing is going. So I agree with you. Our ego would have us comparing our insides to other people's outsides. So I know how I feel intimately, like I'm scared to put a post up or I haven't posted on Medium for like a month. I'm way behind. And I look at you, I'm like, oh my gosh, she's doing so great. That's the ego that does that bad math, that I'm one down, you're one up. And I can't tell people enough, you know, don't put crap out there. I mean, don't put stuff that's not authentic to you. But if you start putting stuff out there, then you're not alone anymore. You let people like us who want to bring ideas together and help you. We can't help you if we can't see you. And our ego has us believing that people are out there to hurt us because they met a few people who hurt us. But what the ego has never talked to you about is the millions of people out there to help you. And what I have found is people, it's just so crazy. Like you and I connect and both of us are abundant folks. We're like, hey, you want to do a podcast? I'm like, hey, sure, let's do it. And I'm sure our minds are both reeling with other cool stuff we could do together or who we could introduce people to, you know, just how we can promote one another, not promote with ego, but promote because ideas are worthy.
I mean, my conversation with Seth Godin was really, revelatory for me because there was one great takeaway from that, which was that generosity is the antidote to fear. So that if you are thinking about somebody that you can help by doing this thing, if you were talking about people out there that can help you, but there's also people out there who you can help. And if you think about that, then it starts to feel kind of selfish to not share what you're learning.
Yeah, that's so true. And I learned a long time ago when in my 20s, I was struggling with some stuff and they're like, get out of yourself, go help others. And it was just that movement with your right heart that led you to the next place you were supposed to be. But if you don't move and if you don't have the right heart, you're not going to get to the next place you're supposed to be. You're going to be in your room thinking about where you'd like to be. And so I work on two things. I work on, you know, movement. It's not going to be perfect, but just document what I'm doing and then just trying to keep my heart open and generous. I love what Seth said.
And I loved what you said also about the documentation as well. It's something that I constantly, you know, as I give this advice to others, I'm going to say I am trying to give this advice to myself is to document. You know, before we had this conversation, I obviously read your entire book because I loved it. And then I did all this highlighting. But then before the conversation, I went through and I started sharing the highlights on Twitter. So I'm documenting what I learned from the book. And then people are on Twitter are liking things and retweeting things. And so I'm getting a feel for, okay, this is what resonates with the people who are in my audience. And it makes it so much easier for me to prepare for this conversation and to make it valuable for the people who are listening. So the documentation can be part of that improvisational process that actually results in better work.
I agree. I went to the dentist this morning and on my way there, somebody called me for a quick note of coaching actually with one of their kids. And my mind is like, what should I do my podcast on today? And I just couldn't think of anything. And I had that conversation with her, great topic. My dentist, I had a great conversation, great topic. I came back, had another phone call, great topic. I sit down at my desk and I'm like, I have no idea what to do a podcast on. And I'm like, the universe just gave me like three incredible conversations to build on, including this one. But I kept thinking, not it. And what we got to start thinking is that's it. So yes. You got to move from not it. Your ego is all about not it to this is it. This is, you know, if this is happening in my life today and it's intriguing and exciting, it's worthy to share and see what other people, you know, can be helped by it.
Oh, wow. So, Sai, thank you so, so much for coming on the show today. Again, the book is No Ego. I really highly recommend everybody go get it. I devoured it. It was a great book. Is there any other places where you'd like people to find you?
You know, I have a podcast called No Ego that I'm hoping I can talk you into returning the favor so I can introduce my audience to you, because they're all working on becoming incredibly creative, cool human beings. But that would be the other place that our company is called Reality Based Leadership. But anywhere you look, hopefully, Cy Wakeman, any place, connect with me on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that good stuff. And we'd love to have you listen to the No Ego podcast as well.
Yeah, check out the No Ego podcast. It sounds like you might hear my voice on that podcast at some point as well. So everybody go subscribe to that and get No Ego the book as well. Thanks so much.
You bet.
Is Love Your Work helping you find the intersection on your love and money Venn diagram? Does it bring you the inspiration and motivation to make you into the person that you want to be? If so, we, together, you and I, can make this the show that we want it to be. I'm trying to make a nourishing and thoughtful show, and I could use your help with that. Please donate to the show. Just a coffee a month will help support the hosting and production of this show. Just a coffee a month will help spread Love Your Work's message, helping more people live a balanced life with a healthy definition of success. To donate, visit our Patreon page at kadavy.net/donate. Patreon is a platform that lets you support creators like me, vote with your dollars, and keep Love Your Work going at kadavy.net/donate. As a thank you, you'll get early access, bonus content, and a discount on Love Your Work merchandise. Learn more at kadavy.net/donate. That's kadavy.net/donate. Love Your Work is made possible by top supporters, such as Arif Akhtar. This has been Love Your Work, and I'm David Kadavy. The theme music for this show is At Sea by Durena from the album About Everything and More by arrangement with Deep Elm Records at deepelm.com. Love Your Work is a production of Kadavy, Inc.